We are approaching. Okay, we're going to start in chapter 4 of the book of Genesis. Now, I told you I'm going to be teaching this way for the first chapter, second chapter, third chapter, fourth chapter. After that, when the fifth chapter comes, someone will read the fifth chapter like we did before. Then we'll go through it and make our comments or make our statements like we used to do so. The reason why this chapter, the first four chapters, I think are extremely important and vital, it gives us a wonderful guideline, a beginning, a foundation that's very, very firm. And knowing that we can begin to start looking at the fifth chapter, sixth chapter, all the way up through the entire Tanakh in relationship of looking at the foundation of the Word of God that's here. And we know the Word of God is Messiah. We know that. You know? So he begins this whole thing and he says, I was there in the beginning. Okay, after this, though, I got probably two more sessions of the fourth chapter, maybe three. No, I'll try to make it down to two more. Then I'm going to take a break from it for a while. And the reason is because there is something that I think I need to go in more exact detail, if you don't mind. It was asked me at the feast by Bill. And I'm going to spend some time in the 8th, 9th, and 10th chapter of the book of John. And I'm going to explain, if I best I can, why those particular chapters are very, very not only important, but enough for us to understand what the Messiah was saying and what was being confronted with him at the 8th day. All right? I think it's very, very important that we pay attention to this. I try to do that in one of the feasts, and it was just too much. I tried to explain chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 10 in one sermon, and I lost everybody under the sun. So I'm going to go through detail on those three chapters, and then I'll come back to our book of Genesis. It's because Jeff is in the book of Acts, so I'm not going to interfere with what he is saying. But I just need to think it's very important that we come to understand a bigger picture, if I can use that terminology, of what took place in the 8th, 9th, and 10th chapter of John. Okay? That's my plan. Genesis chapter 4, verse 1. And Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived, and she bore Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. Excuse me. What happened? The next day I'll read this. And she began to bore, and she again bore his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. In the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought the fruit of the ground, an offering unto the Lord, and Abel, who also brought the first fruits of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect to Abel and to his offering, but to Cain and his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If you do well, shall it not be accepted? And if you do not well, sin lies at the door. And unto thee his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. Okay, that's as far as we're going to go today. I mean, it's a short chapter, but it's very incredible information here that is being told to us. I want to talk to you about first, the very first verse. This is the only statement in the entire Bible that is worded this way. Okay? I have gotten a man from the Lord. All other women in the Bible, and they say they have a child or man, I have gotten the man from David, or from this person. They named the father. But Eve, this very firstborn one, she didn't say that. Well, it's very fascinating. We'll go through some words here today because it tells us something. Now, in your mind, if you were Eve there, what will go through your mind? Your very first child. Now, it's really hard, women, to think about this, but men, they can't. There's no picture whatsoever. But for a woman, what do you think? Why would she say that? I'll clarify some words here for you. The word I have gotten is really meaning is kana, and it means to erect, or that is to create, or to procure. It has a thing of to get or to acquire, to create, to buy, to possess, and all those other ones too. So that word can be used all over the place. To obtain of God, originating, of God originating, creating, redeeming, a possessor. So what does that tell you a little bit so far? So what was going through her mind was the very first child that ever came on the scene. It's like her saying, I, along with not Adam, I, along with the creator of heaven and earth, have come about and produced a man child. Now that's a powerful statement for a woman, isn't it? No woman ever has said it afterwards. From that point on, women didn't get one from the Lord. But she did. That's very good. She was part of a creation of a new life. And that's what that word gotten means, to create with, be adjoined with. And sometimes in our world, because when a man and woman have a child, they're creating something. They're creating life. But she's doing all the work. Right? He's just sitting there waiting for it to come. But for her and for Eve, it's a very fascinating thing within her. But she said, she didn't say, although the very beginning says, here and Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain. And said, I got a man from the Lord. I got a man from Yahweh, yes.
Two things. I wanted to make a statement, and then I want to ask a question. All right, the statement is this. I think when any woman, I remember when you have your first child, and I had a boy the first time, but it wouldn't have mattered if it was a girl. Just the overwhelming, knowing what the substance of what that came from. You can't, for me, it was like, this is the Lord. I have gotten a man child from, in fact, my doctor was Seventh-day Adventist, and as Luke was being born, he said, a man child. And afterwards, I thought, yeah, I've gotten a man child with the help of the Lord, because it blew my mind that the human being could come from inside both of us. It's kind of an amazing, but right. That's not my question. My question is, where on earth did Cain's wife come from?
No.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Going monkey trail all over again.
That comes on in the later chapters, like chapter 5 and 6, so we'll get explain that.
I
but
know,
right
it's
now,
it's very interesting
I've got,
that it jumped
okay.
right into
all right, I know. Well, we didn't go that far, did we?
No.
I'm stopping at a certain location here first.
I know.
Susan, you know me. I'm not going to move that fast ahead. You should know that. Yes.
I think that there is a good chance that Eve, if God had explained the fact that there would be salvation from a son on the earth, that she may have thought she had birthed
yes.
the Messiah.
So they could enter back into this place, all right, called Eden. There was a flame of sword that was going to come. And it's like, now this is the one. This is Jewish thinking as well. This is the one, the only one. That's the first one she ever had, right? That's the one that redeems us. That's the one we get to go back in there. All right? Because who you will, if you partake of the tree, you'll die and you will die. Right? Now, this brand new born baby hasn't taken to the tree. Right? Well, when you get that emotion in that firstborn child, this is very typical, that you would wind up wondering whether or not, because see, as in the beginning, there was a point of knowing you can be redeemed. Where do we know that it was said that it would be redeemed? Nellie? Previous chapter.
Yeah.
Big hint, previous chapter.
Yeah, when they...
What did...
Oh, her seed.
I'm sorry, what?
Her seed.
Her seed.
Yes.
All right, so in the very beginning, she knew from her that serpent is going to get his head smashed in. But the prophecy from the very, very beginning. And so with inside of her, the very first one, oh, that's from me, from the Lord. He's going to go in there and he's going to smash that serpent's head off. Of course, it didn't happen. We know that because we have wonderful hindsight, don't we? We're wiser than she was. No, no, she wasn't told exactly which seed. All right. So this is pretty well understandable. So when you start thinking of this very first day, what she meant and what she was talking about wasn't that she just had this first child and, oh my, it is from the Lord. No, I don't want to get you more specifically in Hebrew. Basically, she says, I've got the man, and the word says from. You know what that word is in Hebrew? Yeah, you look it up. Down there looking it up. You found out?
Haniti.
Et. Eight.
Oh.
Aleph Tov.
Yeah.
Aleph Tov. But it has a vowel sound in this particular case. And basically it means, in the vowel, in this sentence, it means with or near or together with. Okay. Together with. Not just with or near, but also together with. So she is saying, well, I have gotten a man-child together with Yahweh. Not together with Adam, although, of course, he was one of the products thereof, or one of them produce it. But in her mind, and her soul, her being, her mind was not on that. Her mind was on the seed that was within her. Yes, could that be understandable? Mm-hmm. Now, I want to explain a little bit about an awful lot of pagan beliefs. When you go back to many of these pagan beliefs, and the hearing of these people sacrificing their children in the fire, sacrificing and killing their born, is because they're looking for the very same thing. Somebody has to come and redeem us back. And sometimes in their pagan belief, you find out in their doctrines that they think that if they sacrifice their son or daughter, they will be delivered. That's why they sacrifice. And we think, oh, that's stupid. Because, see, we have wonderful, beautiful hindsight. And we have wonderful, beautiful history to know how dumb they were. Right? But in reality, all mankind is waiting for the same exact identical thing, even if they don't understand or know why. Because God said in the book of Psalms, I created in man the desire to live forever. And mankind trying to figure out how. And so mankind knows, even an atheist, inside of him or her is a desire to live forever. That's why the evolutionary concept is what it is. Oh, we'll just evolve into a more better and qualified person, hoping that maybe it's them. But the truth is, it doesn't happen. We know that. So we're looking at this incredible statement she is making, and how what I'm talking to you today, I hope a little bit understands a little bit more of how she was thinking and what was going through her mind. Because, see, it was the very first one, and from her and her seed, because that was the promise. She believed the Lord. She believed Yahweh. She believed the creator of heaven and earth. He just didn't explain to her which one. Now comes the next person on the line. Very fascinating. So it gives you a little bit of story, just a little bit there with Eve. Now the story kind of goes on beyond Eve, goes beyond Adam. And she, again, bore his brother Abel. And Abel was the keeper of the sheep, but Cain, a tiller of the ground. What's the word for Abel?
Abel.
We call him Abel. You really should never pronounce it. They should have the H in front of it so we would know how to pronounce the name. Why they dropped the H is probably have to talk to some English person from England. Why would they drop the H for? Okay. Now, it comes from a... Remember, I look at the noun. I said, where did that come from? No, it comes from a verb. Very fascinating. It's spelled the same way. But in a verb form, what do you think it means? You'll be surprised, I think. She's cheating. She's going to type in the computer right now. You can type in the computer.
The Lord. The
Lord. It's vain. Emptiness. Vanity, we would call it. That's what the name means. So he got his name because what happened to him? He ceased to exist, to empty out, to become vain, to become something that is nothing there, utterly vanished. And what happened to Abel?
He got killed.
He got banished.
Before he ever had any.
Before
he had children.
I'm sorry, what?
Before he had children.
Before he had children. Nothing is from that. There's nothing there that the life of Adam, of Abel, or Habel, has gone. There's no history for him. There's nothing there. It's empty. It's like it never existed.
Wow.
And technically speaking, if it wasn't for the fourth chapter, you would not even know that he ever existed. That's an interesting statement, isn't it? I find it very fascinating when I began to look into his name and I began to say, okay, it does. I find it used in a place in the Bible and it means vain or emptiness or being emptied out or become vain. Vain means what? Void of nothing. There's nothing there.
Useless.
You're saying Abel means that?
Yeah, that's a verb of it. But it's got a noun, the noun name we have. It's pronounced the same way. But just understand where it comes from. And now it kind of explains a little bit. Now, Cain or Cain means just means another word for man. Okay, another name for man. But also a name for a smith. Cain is the name of a person who's a smith. You know, a smith guy is, don't you? Of course, he wasn't. He was not a smith guy. He was, but the smith guys come from him. We'll learn that a little bit later as we go on down. Now, verse 3. In process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering to the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his crop, I mean of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but to Cain, to his offering, he did not have respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? And of course, he continues on, says, if thou dost well, shalt thou not be accepted, and if thou dost not well, sin lies at the door. And unto thee his, or basically it, meaning sin, desire, and thou shalt rule over him, or it. We prefer using our English words. What do you think took place?
He yielded.
I'm sorry, what?
Cain yielded to the sin.
Okay.
He was warned.
What has been the teaching in the past? What have you been learning in the past? What is that you were taught in the past of this story? Why did God reject Cain's fruit of the ground? Well, we know, biblically speaking, he does accept it. And we know that he also accepts the flock. We know that too. So what is the error here? What was Cain's sin? What is it that he did wrong?
I had been taught that what God was rejecting was not the offering in and of itself, but the key difference between Cain's offering and Abel's offering is that it says that Abel gave the first, whereas Cain did not give the first.
Okay.
And that could be implied to be maybe the best, but either way, he didn't give the same way Abel did.
Okay.
The blood.
The what?
The blood.
The blood?
No shedding of blood.
Okay. Any other thought or teaching you had heard of or believed?
I've heard it taught that he didn't bring the best of his offering.
Okay. How would you know that?
Because it uses the term about Abel that the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So you know that God discerned a difference between the two and that he seemed to prefer Abel's. So you have to figure out, well, what did he prefer about Abel's offering?
Because it says, even from the fat. That Abel, it says that Abel
drew from the best of
the firstling of his flocks, even from their fat.
The best of the flock. He gave the best of the, yeah, of the flock. Yes.
I heard in a certain Bible, I don't remember what it was called, but I heard that he said he picked his fruit from the ground.
Oh, okay. Okay, to get where we're getting at, you're partly right. It wasn't the first. And it was the first with Abel. However, we have to continue on with the story. Because there's something there I want you to kind of view and take another look at. What I'm saying is, when she mentioned this the first, and you also brought the same kind of subject matter up, it is part of what took place. But there was something else that already had occurred before this took place. All right? Let's walk into this and let's try to see what we're talking about. But Cain and his offering, he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. Who was Cain wroth at? Who was he mad at?
His brother. God.
His brother. Jealous.
Who do you think he's mad at?
God.
Because that's who he's addressing. And he's looking at God, and God says, I'm not accepted. I have no respect for what you've given to me. I do not respect. Oh, wow. You know what happens to a grown man or any man who does a job, performs it, and builds it, and creates something, and the guy comes, he's ready to sell it, the guy says, I don't have respect for you or your work or anything you're touched your hand to. Wow. What's that do to the man? He's going to get wroth, right? He's going to get mad. He's not going to get mad at his brother. He's going to get mad at the person who just said, you're worthless, in a sense. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
When there's no respect, nice little word we use today. But I tell you, when you tell a man, I have no respect for you, oh, what's the man going to do? Oh, I'm sorry. What kind of who are you? Are you giving respect? No, he's going to be mad. Okay, now what brought forth the anger?
Rejection.
I'm sorry, what?
Rejection.
Enmity.
You want to listen? Isn't this cool? I hope we're learning something here. Mm-hmm. I just want to increase your thinking and your thoughts. That's my object, is to increase your thinking and your thoughts. Because once I bring this about, it'll help you to understand almost everything in what sin is all about from that point on. Yes?
If Eve felt that she had acquired together with the Lord the Redeemer, is that something that
And this is speculation probably, that she would have shared with Cain, and Cain already had a pride problem.
Yeah. Okay. And that's a subject. It's probably very valid. I don't know. I can't say you read, but you got an idea there, a thought there. I did not think about that. All right, now, let's go to verse 7. What does it say? If thou dost well, will thou not be accepted? So was his sin.
He didn't do well.
Whether it was the first crop from the ground or any crop from the ground, it was what Cain was doing and did. Now, what we don't have yet is a picture of exactly what did he do, what did he do, what caused him, or this point. Now, the Messiah, or I should say, the Lord tells him what's going on here. Do you know what the word well means in Hebrew?
Tov.
Sorry, what?
Tov. But he uses a different word.
I'm sorry, what?
He used Tov in the book.
I'm sorry. Tov is in there.
Yeah.
Actually, Yativ. Okay, it's pronounced Yativ. Yatav, which it means. Okay, to make well or to make good. To be, huh?
To do well.
To what is pleasing. Do what is well. Now, when we went through the at the feast, talked to you about he who does the will of my Father, if his will and the will of my Father, then he knows whether what I speak is my doctrine or the doctrine of the Father. So now we see here, in the very beginning, that Cain, his will wasn't to do the will. Because the only thing you know what is to do that is well, or do what is good, do that was acceptable, is you got to listen to the person. Your life has to live according to what that person is telling you, and especially in this case, Yahweh. Yes.
He talks about sin, which is hatat, and there is a requirement for the hatat offering, which is the death of an animal. Is it because Cain brought grain and fruit instead of the required
sin offering? No. He said here, oh, I would have accepted it, but there's something wrong with you. If thou had not done well, not done good, not listening to my will, sin lies at the door. In other words, Cain, when you don't do my will, sin is not just lying at the door, it is your door. That's where you live, Cain. Now what we do? Cain, listen, he says. He says, now Cain, I will tell you something. That unto you, sin is the desire. Oh. You have desired to go against that which is well. You desire to go against that which is holy, just, and good. Your brother didn't. But he didn't say it to be, so I accepted him because of that. So I want to get off this issue, whether or not it was the right thing that he gave, it was the will. If thou will do what is good. Now that's something different. Instead of saying, thou should have done as your brother did, as the brother should be your example, to be the one to be like. Now he didn't say that, did he? Every human being, including Cain, has to face the Creator face to face. And the reason why Abel brought forth the first fruit and the best, or first Abel brought forth the first flock and of the fat thereof, why would he bring it for?
Because he willed to do what was right. There's three kinds of sin.
Oh, I'm not talking with you. I'm talking this one.
Pride of life.
I know, but I'm looking at it. I'm looking at this right now. We're looking at what talk. We're talking about just sin, which is the one that's falling short of the glory of God. We know that. We've been taught that. Hammer our heads. We see it written. We know what it's all about. So now we go in here. It says, now, sin lies is the desire. Sin is the desire, and thou will, and you have rulership over the sin. That's what study basically is telling you. You, the ruler over, means you have what? Jurisdiction, authority, and since it's your desire, you are carrying out your desire because you're the ruler of sin in your life. It's at your door. It's in your house. It's in your home. Cain, it's within you. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, as we go on to the rest of the entire Bible, you can begin to see this inside of people, left and right, left and right, left, everybody. So the very beginning of the book of Genesis, chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4, is the very foundations of why we do what we do. And the genealogy of everyone in this room is a genealogy of Cain. And when you decide, I will not do, I don't want to do, I don't want to listen to, I don't want to respond to, I'll pretend that I'm responding to what you request. Here is my fruit of the ground. Cain could have given the best of the best of the best. It would have been accepted if his will to do good was in his mind and his heart. With Abel, it was. I mean, these two young men, we don't know who they are, had grown up knowing what happened to mom and dad. Now remember, the book of Genesis is not in chronological order. Nor is the book of Numbers. Nor is the book of Exodus. Nor is the book of Deuteronomy. And I think Daniel did a very good explanation. This event and that event and this event, they're not one right after the other. They're all leading into the one issue that he wanted to lead forward to. We learned that in the book of Judges, right? Mm-hmm. The last three chapters doesn't seem to fit anywhere except in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. But the last three stories, oh, there is a connection to there and Eli. Now you got a picture. See, that's how God thinks. He doesn't think in chronological time. The book of Genesis and the book of Numbers, Exodus, all of that where his word is at. He talks about subject matters. An event here, an event there, an event here, an event here. In the book of Numbers, where it looked like people think Moses wrote it, the same exact story is in the book of Judges, well after the death of Joshua and all. Same exact story. But what the authors are putting together is, you see this event, and that event, and this event, and they're putting packages together because that's how God looks at things, a package deal. We, because we are human, we want to look at it in a chronological order. It doesn't work that way. We have to look at event. And what I'm saying to this, even the 6 days of creation, it's not just 6 days. It's six major events. Major things. The subject isn't first day, morning and evening. Second day, morning and evening. Oh, I mean, evening and morning, rather. Evening and morning. The event is the big picture. Right? And so sometimes in our world, we have to kind of convince people who believe in evolution. No, day one, day two, day three, day four, day five. That's great because they have to begin somewhere, right? But it's the stories that's behind each one of those days. Remember, the day didn't come into completion until the big event took place. And every one of those 6 days is massive events. Far greater than our minds can ever even put together, picture in a lifetime. So, we have here, in the book of Genesis, I will not get into, I will talk about maybe, well, it's 3 o'clock. But I want to go back. I've got to clarify this even more about the word well or well done. It has a lot of other meanings. It means to do good, to do good deal, to do well, to do thoroughly, to be do completely, to make things good or make things right or make things beautiful, and to do that which is right. You see, it's a ramification of a big word now, isn't it? So when we say the word will, we see the word will, this is the statement he made to Cain. If you do well, it will be accepted. He didn't accept it because Cain, was not doing well. He wasn't doing the will of the Creator of heaven and earth. He wasn't living his life, wasn't that way. Sin was at the entrance of his door, so lying at his door. It doesn't mean it was creeping in. He needed to shut it. No. That's it. Your house is made up of that. And the very entryway into your world is sin. You understand what I'm saying? It didn't come on him unawares. It didn't come on him being snuck up back and backsided. Oh, what was that? What was that? What? Oh, it desires me? No. Sin doesn't desire. You desire sin. I desire sin because it's what? I don't have to listen to the Creator. I don't want to listen to the Creator. Oh, well, he wants this. Okay, I'll give it to him. Yeah, well, yeah, I'll give him the best. Yeah, here you go. It's not. It's more than just an attitude. It's a resentment. That's why he became very angry with God. Now, who do you take it out on? Took it out on his brother.
You kicked the proverbial dog.
Now, let's put this in another perspective, okay? I hope that a lot of you have unquestionable amount of hope in you. Not just faith. You have a lot of faith, but the hope being unquestionable is domineering. It's very powerful because technically speaking, according to the Apostle Paul, hope is, should be, and will come to pass, be greater than faith. Right? And the next step, of course, is charity. That one will outperform hope. But the first thing I want to talk to you about is hope. Now, did Cain have hope in him? Did Abel have hope in him?
Yeah.
Let me ask you another question. Maybe make it clearer. Have you met anybody, whether it's family, more likely to be family or friend, an enemy, it won't affect you, but a family and a friend who attacks your belief. Really attacks. Not just saying, oh, you idiot. Really attacks. You ever met those people?
Uh-huh. Yeah, right under my belief.
Okay. Have anybody actually come out and actually cursed you for what you believe? Some of you say yes, some of you say no. Now, I want you to realize this was taking place here. Cain was not just not respected or accepted. Cain was cursed. And Abel was not cursed. Now, in your life, in my life, when someone cusses you up one side and down the other because of your hope that you have, they are in serious trouble.
So,
you are not in trouble.
Okay.
That's the reason why you could take trials or tribulations and anger because you have something someone who's cursing you doesn't have. They don't have the blessed things you have. They may have, quote, faith, but they may not have hope. And once that hope, the hope is what you have, that they are technically attacking. Stop and think about this for a moment. If they're just attacking your faith, well, thousands of people believe a thousand different things about God, right? But you're being attacked because of the hope. What do you do in your world that proves that you have hope constantly?
Keep on.
So what?
Keep on.
Keep going?
Keep on.
Keep on, okay. I want actions.
You forgive.
Not forgiveness goes into love. That's the next step up. Yes?
Well, that Abraham, the scripture says he hoped on when there was no hope.
Yeah? But what did Abraham do?
You bless and you do not curse.
Okay.
In return.
He obeyed God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what?
He obeyed God.
When you obey God, that's going to give you so much hope that it's unmeasurable. Now, every single Shabbat, we are obeying Him, and every single Shabbat, hope is getting us stronger and stronger and stronger. Every time we keep the Feast of Tabernacles, we keep the Feast of Shavuot, we keep the Feast of Passover. These are repetition things over and over that you do and you do. And every time, I hope that in my mind. And every time you keep a holy day, every time you come to Sabbath to listen to somebody speak who speaks out of the Word of the Living God, that increases your faith, increases your hope, increases, make you stronger and stronger and stronger, not within the Lord, not just a bunch of words, but your life. How you think, how you act, how you talk.
Amen.
And then you have this compassion for people. You can, the only way you can, my personal opinion, this is the only way you know how to forgive is when you know how to have charity. Biblical charity. You cannot forgive somebody if there is no hope in you. No reason for you to forgive anybody if there's no hope in you. The only reason why you should do that is because you have hope for them. Your hope is that they will come and see. Hope that they will come and God's due time, they will be led unto the very same avenue, that narrow, narrow course, that narrow, narrow road, that they will be led this way. And that's true charity. It has nothing to do with, oh, I got to forgive my brother because he hit me in the teeth. No, I need to forgive him because I want him to know when you hit me on the right cheek, I'm going to give you the left one for my dear brother. I want you to know where I live. I want you to know what I'm doing. I want you to have the hope that I have. You understand how building that is? We are going to suffer. But every time you are struck, what does James say? When you have a trial, count it all what?
Joy.
All joy. Because hope, what does Hebrews say? Hope is that which is unseen, okay, and gives us joy. Mm-hmm. All right? So when I'm looking back here at Cain, and I'm looking back here at Abel, and I'm seeing something that was very horrible for Cain. It's not just that he sinned, he had no hope. When you walk away from God and you walk contrary, and we won't go into this today, but God does not hear, nor does He respond to anybody that goes contrary to Him. Scripture is very, very clear on that one. And we have a man here in the very, very beginning, and the issue was, do well. It will be accepted. If you do not do well, I'm going to reject it. I'm going to reject you. And take what you gave me, whether it's good or whether it's of the best crop or of the minor crop or the unimportant, take it away. I don't want it. And why we know this? Because God said that to the whole house of Israel and the prophets. I will not accept it. You bring forth me the things that are evil or not unclean or that which is secondary. We sound like he's upset because it's only secondary stuff, not the best stuff. No, it's the attitude, the will to not do what God wants you to do. And that's what makes him mad. You don't fall in that line, do you? So hope is what you're full of. In the very, very beginning here, we see someone who has no hope. Because once God does not accept you or your offering, you're going to feel absolutely hopeless. There's nothing there for you. So the next thing you're going to do is attack. But you can't attack. How do you pick up a stone or a rock or anything and hit the creator of heaven and earth on the head? How do you retaliate against him? You can't, right?
Yeah, you can. You go after the one.
Don't, no, but you do. You go after somebody else.
Yeah.
Like Cain went after Abel.
Yeah, going after the ones that he said, I accept. Bam, got it. You know? Right? And technically speaking, it's true if there was pride of life there involved. But I'm just talking about just one thing in the very beginning, okay? And that word is sin, which means you're falling short. He hadn't committed murder yet, right? I got a problem. Now, sin is not missing the mark because you didn't know where it was at. I'm sorry. A lot of people have this. Now, there are some sins you might commit that you didn't know you did. But Cain, I'm sorry. He knew exactly what the Creator was saying. It wasn't a surprise to him at all. He was, quote, shooting at the target. Yeah, right, okay, I should have missed. We might have an attitude like that. Do you get a picture here of what I'm saying to you? And so when we now see the sins of the great men in the Bible and sins of the evil men in the Bible, the ones who have been great, what do? They did as Abel did. Because that's the only hope they have. Find out what the will of God is. Why was Abraham so well? He's believed. That's a big one, isn't it? Now, in the very beginning, Abel believed. Cain did not. Do you see the events? I will not go through even more today because it's already 3:00. We'll talk about that, about him killing Abel and what God had to say afterwards, okay? Then we'll get into your other question. Mm-hmm. Remember, event.
Yeah,
now we'll go someplace else.
Yeah.
That's a different issue on the last part of the 12th chapter, the 4th chapter. All right? Any questions? Any thoughts?
Well, you know, one of the things we talk about with having hope, for Cain, you know, he knew the Creator, knew who the Creator was, had no doubt there was a Creator.
No doubt, right, yes.
For him, it was pretty obvious that when the Creator says, look, you know, I don't accept your supplications. You know,
that's your supplication, that's right. So hold down to, yeah.
That's the equivalent in today's market of basically, you know, zeroing out your bank account and saying, look, sorry, you're cut off. You don't have any money. Sorry.
Yeah.
And you know, in today's world, people panic when there's even the threat that all their livelihood, their life support is going to be gone, and they panic. So you can imagine to be in that realm, in Cain's mind, and be completely disconnected from the Creator. I mean, you have no idea what's going to happen to you. You know, if you're in the Creator's good graces. Okay, so he wipes you out, but at least you have faith that you know that you're in his good graces. Something good will come out of it. But if you're out of his good graces, you're hopeless. I mean, he could wipe you out and decide not to do anything else. And
you cease to be.
Yeah.
Well, that's the truth today, too, really.
Yeah. I mean, really, in today's world, though, people are, you know, they're confused. They're not as clear on that issue as Cain was. You know, today it's like, okay, well, you know, if God doesn't like you, so what? I've got Buddha and you got everybody else.
I'll go to another god, yeah.
Just go to the next door.
Cain, there was no other god for him to go to.
There was no
god. Well, there's the only one. The only one.
That if he was out of favor with God, that was it.
That was it. You can't run to any place else.
No, nowhere else.
But when you stop and think about it, Cain and Abel had heard the stories, which was a good point. Could you imagine telling your kid how you walked with God? And how God talked to you, and how it was before there was this kind of a situation.
And plus,
you could see what Cain.
Both of them could come to the Lord. Both of them could walk and talk with Him at that point in time.
Adam and Eve.
Yeah. But okay, I'm accepting you.
So telling your kid these stories.
Yes.
And what the garden was like that you lived in, and now you've got the eldest son who. Is rebellious.
The very same thing his dad had to do. You're going to have to work on the ground you came from.
Yeah.
Okay, thorns and thistles.
Yeah. So who needs God?
Yeah, who needs God? I'm doing all my work. All right, if there are no more questions, we will call it a break.